Cuomo News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
Now, things seem to have abruptly gotten somewhat better at the San Antonio airport, talking about that a moment ago, where a very specific bomb threat forced the evacuation of the terminal, and arriving planes were not being allowed to come up to the gate. The people who were in the terminal were actually evacuated onto the tarmac of the airport. Now we come to understand that there are three packages in the parking garage. Those packages have not been cleared, but I think passengers are, last word here, being allowed back into the terminal. And I have no word as to whether or not the planes are going to be allowed to pull up to the gates and disembark the passengers there. I was mentioning that, you know, when something like this occurs, there was a report that came out from the State Department. It's annual, the annual country reports on terrorism, which basically said, you know what, when it comes to Al-Qaeda, they're pretty well going down the tubes, very bluntly put. That with the death of Osama bin Laden and some of the key Al-Qaeda operatives, that terrorist organization is in major decline. Peter Brooks from the Heritage Foundation, he's the Senior Fellow for National Security Affairs, joins me here on Newsline PM. Hi, Peter. This doesn't mean that we just breathe a big sigh of relief and think, boy, am I glad we're past that terrorism era.
Well, I think that you have to be very careful about that, Ken. I mean, complacency is a big, big mistake. You know, we have done a good job on dealing with Al-Qaeda, especially what they call Al-Qaeda's core, the one in the Pakistani tribal areas. But the number two, Ayman al-Zawahiri, is still out there. We're not hearing much of him. Of course, you never know. I mean, you know, when you're looking at the news, there's lots of distractions out there, right? I mean, you got the Olympics going on, you got Syria. They may not be talking about it. We may not be hearing much about him. But, I think complacency is a mistake. Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula is really of great concern to me. This is the group that has come along with the underwear bombers. In fact, I read something the other day that said the second underwear bomb was much more sophisticated than the first. So they're making progress there. And I just think they're waiting for us to let our guard down.
I'll tell you how sad it is in that, you know, with the Olympics ongoing here and having come up, in the back of my mind, I kept thinking, please, please don't let anything happen here. Please don't let anything untoward go on in London during these Olympic Games. And I was kind of ticked off at myself for even, you know, having that mental thought. But at the same time, if we're not cognizant of what the possibilities are and what threats exist, then we're unprepared for something that may happen.
Yeah, I mean, we should, you know, be thinking about this. I mean, what, in 1972, the terrible tragedy in Munich, right?
Yep.
With the Israeli athletes. And so, I mean, we got to be thinking about that. And, you know, the worst thing we can do is suffer from a lack of imagination about what bad people might do to us. I mean, we don't want to become paranoid, but, you know, who would have thought that people on a beautiful September day would fly planes into buildings, for God's sake. So, I mean, you know, there's a lot of reasons you have to be imaginative, you have to be able to connect the dots, you have to, you know, be thoughtful about these sort of things. And like I said, complacency in a very dangerous world is a big mistake.
When you look at, and I know that with some of the Al-Qaeda operatives that are still left, Al-Qaeda used to be real big on anniversaries.
Yep.
And so the anticipation of the, you know, of Osama bin Laden's death or any one of the other chief operatives that have been killed over the past couple of years here by the United States, you have to wonder if they're just kind of lurking in the bushes there, waiting for us to be lulled into a sense of complacency. Could it be a deliberate effort on their part to kind of, you know, tampen everything down and get us relaxed that we think the worst is over?
Sure, of course. I mean, you know, it would be nice to be able to lull your opponents into a false sense of complacency, right? No matter what you're doing, whether it's, you know, athletics or, you know, or terrorism. I mean, you know, when I talk about anniversaries, I always say, you know, these guys do things on anniversaries except when they don't. You know what I mean? So, you know, but there is a certain sort of extra oomph that comes from being able to pull something off on an anniversary like September 11th or something along those lines. And I think that's why people were very concerned in London about the fact that 1972 was 60 years ago. I'm sorry, it was 40 years ago, and you know that, and then people might try to do it because then if they pull it off, I think it has that extra sort of oomph. So they do try to do these things, but they're also just looking for vulnerabilities and when things may be able to come together, because a lot of times in a terrorist attack, there are a number of moving parts.
So if Al-Qaeda is, in fact, in an era of steep decline,
yeah.
Is there another terrorist group that is emerging and that is on the ascent?
Well, you see, the Al-Qaeda's core, as I mentioned, Ken, the ones that are in Pakistan, the 9/11 crowd, you know, they're arrested, they're dead, you know, they got their heads down. But then there's this group, Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. There's Al-Shabaab, which is a terrorist group in Somalia. And there's big concerns because there have been reports that a number of young Somali Americans have returned to fight in these fights in that part of the world. There's Boko Haram in Nigeria. And so I think there's, you know, there's other groups out there. And like I said, I don't think we're, you know, in the day after 9/11, but I also don't think we're in a post-9/11 era yet.
It's just that, you know, you always wonder because water seems to seek its own level. And
sure.
and nature, if you will, doesn't hold well with a void. So you're just kind of on the level of awareness going, okay, if we have this group kind of fading, there's got to be another group out there that figures it can pick up the baton and complete the relay race.
Sure. I mean, I think that's some of the groups that I mentioned. I mean, these are Al-Qaeda affiliates. They're looking for, you know, opportunities. A lot of them are having success in their part of the world. The concern is when they turn themselves to the United States. You know, another thing is that most people, you know, I was thinking and writing about Syria today for tomorrow's New York Post. Al-Qaeda is in Syria. Al-Qaeda is back in Iraq. And, of course, we better start thinking about Al-Qaeda returning to a place like Afghanistan.
Yep.
When American troops leave. So, yeah, I mean, it is kind of a... There are challenges of that, or it could be a major power. I mean, you just got to be very careful about the international security environment. We got to deal with the rise of China, you know, what's going on in the South China Sea. So there's always something to be thinking about. And most of the security analysts, I think, are probably pessimists in general. But, of course, I say if you're a pessimist, you're never disappointed. But, you know, you're always worried about the worst-case scenarios because, you know, the loss of human life or terrible damage, you know, done by a political unit such as a state or a terrorist organization is, you know, you just don't get a mulligan on that. So you got to be out in front of it and proactive.
All right. Peter Brooks, senior fellow for the National Security Affairs portion of the Heritage Foundation. Always good talking with you. I always learn a lot more than what I knew when I started the conversation. Thanks, Peter.
You're just being nice. Thanks
no, I'm not. I'm being candid. Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
Take
Peter Brooks
time.
There.
Bye-bye.
Good information there, and there's no dramatic change in the situation in San Antonio right now. We'll keep you updated as we get information on that, and we'll see what ABC and our news department does on it as well. Hang with us. More needles on another airplane. This one, I think, was Southwest, but I'm not sure.
You've heard what's happening. Now, find out what it means to you. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
So we had those four Delta flights, and I think they were all out of Amsterdam last month with the sewing needles in the turkey sandwiches. Those are nice ciabatta rolls, too, by the way. Now we have this Air Canada. I thought it was Southwest. I was incorrect. Air Canada flight from Victoria that was headed to Toronto. And there was a sewing needle in some of the food on that flight. One of the passengers got what's described, I guess, as a minor injury. Just somewhat unsettling. You don't know if this is a copycat. You don't know if there's rhyme or reason to this. Let's check in with Steve Danicek, who's our travel expert here at Como, joins me on Newsline PM. Hello, Steve.
Hey, how you doing? Well, I'll tell you what, Ken. You get a choice. You can have the needle. Or you can have a collection of other things, roach carcasses, ants, flies, tainted food. You know, it kind of goes to the security of the food as well as, you know, the specific incident. And I was looking over some of the citations here for food safety. FDA regulates the sky chefs and the caterers that put the food on the airplane. TSA in this country... monitors the security, how secure the food is before it's prepared and put on a plane, but they won't tell us what's going on there. The FDA, though, will tell us what sorts of violations they found for contaminated food, low temperatures, you know, that sort of thing.
I think that's where we're better off just sticking with the pretzels.
Kind of tough to bake anything straight into those.
Yeah, I think. But it does give you pause. It makes one wonder, because there's absolutely no evidence to suggest that this is a wider conspiratorial kind of effort to do something to airline food. But at the same time, you don't know if it's a copycat. You don't know if it's someone that says, oh, I want to get even with them, too, so I'm going to do that.
Or just a prank that's gone wrong. Somebody has a needle and says, oh, I'll just push it in that sandwich that's sitting there in the, waiting to be served. That's correct. And obviously, time will tell on that. But the overriding thing, the thing that's even, I think, after reading this stuff, there's 4 million meals the Sky Chefs, as an example, serve.
Well, that's a loose term when you're talking about airline food.
Yeah. But there's two things that have come up. And in the past, they've said, well, maybe you're going to get contaminated on a plane, contaminated food and that sort of thing. And the reason that doesn't show up, on cruise ships we always see it as, epidemics sort of things. But when the plane lands, everybody goes home. If they're going to get sick, they get sick at home. And oftentimes they don't realize they've contracted, a coliform illness on the plane. So we don't have a lot of epidemic type things coming back saying it was because of that plane. I'm more concerned about improperly prepared food than I am about objects and food. It's not good, and you're right. Will we ever find out how that needle got into that piece of food?
And the alternative, because I've noticed, and I'm sure you have as well, a lot of kiosks catering to people after they've gone through security, where you can pick up these little mini meals to take with you on the plane.
Sure, because they're cheaper than buying what's on the plane, or if the plane even has anything.
And I'm thinking, well, okay, but the same catering people that perhaps are preparing the airplane sandwich may well have prepared the sandwich in this box lunch that I'm purchasing.
Well, they might, but generally those are vendors at the airport that are renting spaces actually for their shop. I'm not sure that the caterers have a lot of access unless those vendors are buying from them. And that they might do in terms of some of the sandwich type things that you see on the shelves. That I don't know.
One of the other things I wanted to ask you about quickly before we run out of time here is this guy that got kicked off a Spirit Airlines at O'Hare International Airport because his pants were too baggy.
His pants were too baggy.
They were dropping down around his butt.
Yeah. Well, you know what? That's it affects the other passengers on a plane if there's somebody that's objectionable, whether it's pants hanging down or too much cleavage or they smell. And there are numerous incidents where when someone who just should have taken a shower and is smells, is a stench, is removed from the plane, that the passengers will actually cheer. I've been on flights where that's been a case, and it's ugly.
Well, there are people who get on these flights who, shall we say, bathe in cologne or perfume wish they'd get booted.
Yeah, but you're right. The airline do have to look out for all the passengers on a plane. If there's one that's objectionable or it's going to cause difficulty in during the flight, not difficulty in terms of acting out, but is a source of irritation, I think the airline has every right to remove that plane for the benefit of the others.
Yeah. All right, Steve Danicek, Como Travel Expert. Always good talking with you.
Take care.
Steve.
Bye-bye.
All right. In a moment, you would think that things are recovering a little bit, but no, I think we're going to talk here in a moment why more adult kids are living at home.
Time to discuss, dissect, and debate the news. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
Be it ever so humble, there is no place like home. Particularly when you have access to a full fridge and a mom that'll do your sheets and your laundry. We're talking about young adults. Back in 1980, 70% lived at home. More recently, 24%. 43% of those kids under 25 live at home. We'll find out more.
Como News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
Certainly a sign of the economic times. I think it may be also a sign of volatile relationships that have ended. And there's a lot of things that may account for the fact that we've got more and more young people living with mom and dad. And in fairly significant numbers. Welcome back to Newsline PM on this Wednesday afternoon, first day of August. Thanks for joining me here. I appreciate it. I was mentioning earlier that the number of young adults, 20 to 34, in 1980, living with their parents, it was 17%. In up around 2009, it was 24%. And among those under 25, it was 43% versus 32% in 1980. Now, that 43%, I'm left to wonder, because we're talking about an age where kids may be attending college, their primary residence, you know, if they're away at college, may be the dorm during the school year, but they are back with mom and dad during the summer and the holidays and, you know, perhaps immediately after they graduate. And I don't know if that also incorporates the boomerang kids, because I know my oldest son, he boomeranged a couple of times, and my youngest son boomeranged a couple of times, very short periods. But, you know, just, you know, getting caught up in that big economic crunch took its toll. Sally Coslow is the author of Slouching Toward Adulthood. I'm still slinking toward adulthood, Sally. Thanks for joining me. I appreciate it.
Great to talk to you, Ken.
So is this a phenomenon that is on the wane, or is it, you know, what's it doing right now?
It's growing. There's pretty much a stampede of people in their 20s and sometimes even in the early 30s who are back in the nest, those empty nests, those proverbial nests that parents got a little depressed about. Well, they're not empty anymore. I mean, one reason why is economic. People under 25 years old, 53% of them are either jobless or underemployed. Instead of being a teacher, they're a barista, or they have an unpaid internship in some glamour field, which has become the new starting job. So in many cases, there's no alternative except to return to parents.
So
that's one reason.
Dad's man cave goes back to being Junior's bedroom.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, another reason is that there's tremendous student loan debt right now in the United States. The average student owes $45,000. So even if a person in their 20s, and this could be the late 20s, has a job, they might be able to pay their loan off as well as pay apartment rental. So there's another reason why you see this. So there's some really solid economic reasons, and there's some other reasons too.
Does this reflect on the individual? Because I'm thinking back to kids of that age, or back when I was that age, there was a certain stigma past a period of time of how old you were, if you were still at home.
There's far less of a stigma now. I was just asked to write for Cosmopolitan magazine on tips for women who are dating a guy who lives at home, because so many people are in this boat right now. Sometimes it's not for these practical reasons, however. Sometimes it's because baby boomer parents have raised their children to expect nothing but the best. So as a person doesn't want the hovel that they could have with their roommate from college, you know, the cruddy apartment, they would rather have a beautiful home stocked with the, you know, with the refrigerator stocked and make use of their parents' car than live in the kinds of apartments that their parents perhaps lived in back in the day.
Do parents, are they on the same page with this, or do they feel obligated? Does it become a burden?
I think it varies by the parent, but there's this, one of the reasons I wrote my book, Slouching Toward Adulthood, is that a lot of parents are just really flummoxed by this. They don't realize what the rules are. They don't really impose any rules, and they often wind up acting the same way toward their 29-year-old that they did when that person was 12 years old. And some young people fall back into their younger childhood ways, which is not a particularly good thing all around. So parents have to realize that they can renegotiate the contract, so to speak, and that they can expect their young person to possibly pay some rent, and if that's not possible, certainly at least kick in around the house, make meals, chauffeur younger siblings, do the snow shoveling, et cetera, et cetera.
So what about, and I don't know if this is applicable at all, but for young marrieds, is there some kind of statistical hint as to whether or not they're involved in this or not? Or,
well, this is less common, but also people are postponing marriage because of the recession. When the recession that isn't really a recession, but we all know it's we have a flat-lined economy, that you see people putting off marriage, putting off having kids. They might be living together, but they're not planning on marrying. There are some very profound numbers that reflect this.
But I understand what you're saying, but I'm curious as to whether or not those young married or the cohabitating couple, do they move back in with her mom and dad or his mom and dad?
Well, you see that happening. It's not as common as single people living with their parents, but yes, I interviewed some people for my book who were in that boat, yes.
Yeah, that'd be kind of awkward.
Kind of awkward, right. Kind of awkward, and some families claim to really love these arrangements. And in other cultures, it's common for families to live together. It's just not common in the United States.
Well, unless your name is the Waltons or something, I mean, you know. So when is this going to kind of be a barometer as to the improving economy when we see these numbers begin to diminish somewhat?
Or? Absolutely, yeah, definitely, because I don't think people, and I'm speaking of both generations, the baby boomer parents as well as the young adults, I don't think anyone loves it so much that given their druthers, they would continue to do it. I think when people, young people get good solid jobs and can pay off their loans and can also afford to have a place of their own to live, they want that independence.
All right.
And frankly, parents want it too. They want to be able to enjoy their possible retirement.
They want to start walking around the house naked again.
There you go.
Right there. All right, Sally Coslow, author of A Slouching Toward Adulthood. Good talking with you. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ken. Bye-bye.
Right. I'm going to ask you, is this a situation that you're facing or have faced? How does it work for you, or how did it work for you? Did it go smoothly? Was it a pain in the butt? Was it, you know, what you would have liked? Or, I mean, when your kids come back home and they're living there, is this a difficult thing for you? Is it a burden, or is it a joy? 206-421-1000, that's the local line. And the toll-free number for you is 877-397-COMO. That's 877-397-5666.
This is Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
So we're talking this phenomena of, people in their 20s and 30s moving back home, mostly because of the economy. Sometimes it's they can't find the job in their field that's going to pay them what they thought it was worth. Sometimes it's because they can't rent as nice an apartment as the house that their parents live in. Whatever it is, the number is rising sharply. In 1980, 17% of young adults 20 to 34 lived at home. And as late as 2009, rather, it was up to 24%. And under 25, a high of 43%. 43% living at home with mom and dad. So I'm asking you, is this something that you've had to deal with? Is it something you are dealing with? How has it worked? 206-421-1000, 877-397-COMO. Jen, let me press the right button. Jen, you're up on Newsline PM. Thanks for calling.
No problem, Ken. So I kind of have the opposite situation where my in-laws have moved in with us and have been living with us for, well over 90 years now. And it works. I mean, it's a blessing and a curse at the same time because four adults in the house and then I have two young children. The blessing because they take care of my kids for me, but you know, you have four adults in the house, you certainly can't walk around naked.
Well, I'd kick them to the curb. Why have they been, if I may be so bold as to ask, why have they lived with you for 9 years?
You know what? It's an economy issue. I mean, they don't have jobs right now. I mean, my father-in-law, it used to be in the fishing industry and is now like a captain of big vessels, and the jobs that he gets are on and off. And so they really can't afford to live anywhere else. And, you know, kicking them to the curb while sometimes sounds like a really great idea, they're family, and so we're not going to, you know, we can't do that.
I do get that. I really do. Overall, has it worked pretty well for you? Obviously, after 9 years, if things are still going, it's not that bad.
You know, we definitely have our moments and struggles, and there's times when I'm talking to my husband about whether or not we need to really rethink this. But you know what? If they weren't taking care of my children, because we both work really wonky hours, so it's nice not to have to wake them up at 5 a.m. to bring them to childcare. If there wasn't that element involved, I don't know that this would be working out as well as it does.
Well, so there's something reciprocal there. All right. Thanks, Jen. I appreciate it.
No problem.
All right,
thank
good you. Good talking with you. 206-421-1000. John out there on the cell phone. You're up on Newsline PM.
Thanks for taking my call, Ken. I've got two girls, 18 and 20, still at home, but they're going to school. And I support them, and I will, you know, have them stay at home so I can help the cost is fine. But after they graduate, I'm ready for them to leave. My wife, on the other hand, wants to build two wings on our house so they can stay forever. And I, but you hit the nail on the head, man. As soon as they're out, I want to walk around naked too. You know.
Well,
so
let me ask you.
It occurs, but you know they're college students. They don't do anything.
But let me ask you, John. If the economy doesn't improve, they get their college degree. They've got college debt, and they come and they say, "Hey, Daddy, I need a couple of years here more." Are you going to kick them out?
Well, we'll talk about it. But, you know, if they get a degree in something and they can't find a job, yeah, I'm old schoolers. They can still flip burgers and make a living.
Okay. And so that would be the alternative for them.
Absolutely. Right. If they want to stay after that, then there's going to be a lot of rules.
And John's going to answer the door naked.
You're damn right.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, John. 206-421-1000. Jerry on a cell phone. You're up on Newsline PM.
Thanks for taking my call, Ken. I kind of have the opposite situation of your last caller. Our daughter graduated from Wazoo, and, you know, at the time when the market was really horrible, and came home with the idea that she would, you know, look for work and find employment and then eventually be able to get out on her own. She lived in a sorority, so she wasn't excited about the roommate concept. So she was trying to find a place that she could afford on her own. Well, that just didn't happen because the rents even today are obscene. And it literally took my wife and I deciding to do a major remodel in our upstairs, and her bedroom became our walk-in closet. So that gave her the motivation to get out of the house.
So she came home one day from work, and there were all your suits in what used to be a room.
We gave her a week's notice, and you'd be amazed at what kind of drive somebody has when they know that where they were sleeping a week earlier was going to be retrofitted into a walk-in closet.
Provided a little extra momentum. Thanks, Jerry. I appreciate the call.
Uh-huh.
I think this is obviously a very individual decision that has to be made with families. But like I said, very short period of time, both my sons boomeranged back home, and it was actually fun having them there. But it's nice to see them out on their own as well.